On today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about process, and particularly the writing process or various two approaches to process that aren't really related, but that I've experienced lately concerning fiction. Over the reading week break, I was able to travel to Fredericton to launch my new collaborative fiction book, Dead Writers, which is out with Invisible Publishing, and their publisher is out in Fredericton. I had never visited Fredericton, so I've always wanted to go. I was also able to do a class visit at the University of New Brunswick and attend their graduate fiction workshop and sort of give a presentation. It was a pretty rushed trip. I was only there for one night, but it was definitely a worthwhile experience, and everyone in Fredericton was so welcoming, and I'm excited that I was able to go there over the reading week. So the presentation that I did was on sound, sentences, and consecution. This idea of consecution is a method of writing developed by the writer Gordon Lish. And if anyone's familiar with Gordon Lish, he's probably most famous or infamous for working with the writer Raymond Carver. So we know Carver's stories as being super minimalist, but apparently they weren't that way until Lish got to them. They were pretty maximalist, and Lish kind of famously trimmed them down until they, some of the time, didn't even resemble what Carver had written. So that's kind of what he's most well known for, but he's actually a writer in his own right, and he also used to hold these workshops in writer Christine Scott's apartment. So I was introduced to this version of Lish, not through someone who had attended these workshops, but was sort of a fan of the writers who had, so people like Christine Scott. Essentially, consecution is a method of writing that involves taking a sound or taking something in the previous sentence to lead you into the next sentence. You can also look at consecution more broadly as you're taking an image or an echo from what you've already written and bringing it forward into the next sentence or the next chapter of what you're working on. Most of the time, consecution appears as an attention to musicality in your prose, sort of this sonic perception. So one example is the writer Christine Scott, who uses a lot of alliteration in her work. And as a poet, this idea of consecution really interested me, especially as I began to transition from working on poetry to working on fiction. I found it a little maybe ironic that in my poetry, I really care a lot about musicality and sound. And for whatever reason, when I began to write fiction, that attention to sound and the sentence was not there in the same way. So I'm going to read a little bit of a lecture online called The Sentence is a Lonely Place by the writer Gariel Lutz. And it's an amazing essay. I think it was initially given as a talk, but you can find the whole thing online if you go to the Believer's website. But I'll just read the first sentence. The sentence, with its narrow typographical confines, is a lonely place. The loneliest place for a writer, and the temptation for the writer to get out of one sentence as soon as possible and get going on the next sentence is entirely understandable. So that sort of beginning to this talk really resonated with me. Lutz goes into talk about how a lot of writers are just interested in getting from point A to point B as quickly as possible, and that there's sort of little attention paid to making the words in a sentence feel like they belong together, that they're inevitable, or that they live together on the page. And she suggests different tactics on how you can make your language sort of come to life a little bit more. And one of those approaches is consecution. So I really recommend that whole essay, which can be found online. I also want to read a little bit from Christine Scott. This is one of the authors that Lutz talks about. Remember, she's the author that used to host the Lish workshops in her apartment. So this is sort of a little bit from an interview that she gave, which was also in The Believer, and it comes from some of the advice that she received from Lish himself. So Scott says, "Each sentence is extruded from the previous sentence. Look behind you when writing, not ahead." And the interviewer then asks what Lish meant by "look behind you when writing, not ahead." And Scott says, "He meant this quite literally as a means of composition. Query the preceding sentence for what might most profitably be used in composing the next sentence. He contended that with this method, no writer could ever be legitimately blocked. The sentence that follows is always in response to the sentence that came before." So I then went down a little bit of an internet rabbit hole. I found a talk that Scott gave to the Sewanee Writers Workshop, and I found this quote to be really interesting as well. So Scott says, "The story in any successful story is contained in its opening gestures. To go further, the story is directed by a sentence found most always in the opening paragraph. The writer knows which sentence it is that informs her story, and that sentence will serve as a reminder to the writer of what the story is about. A writer would do well to look back at what has been written, to consider the driving sentence and the ways in which that sentence has been rewritten, deepened, darkened over the course of the story." So I found this really fascinating as well. I'm not sure that all of my stories are contained in the opening paragraph in one sentence, but I really like this idea that maybe you have an energy or an image, or there's one sort of driving force to a story that if you can sort of identify and distill what that is, then you will never get lost as you're working on a piece. I'll just read this piece of Christine Scott's. "He's making that nicking sound again, sucking on a cough drop stuck to the roof of his mouth. I might be sucking on one too. He's that close, and my own mouth is filling with the sloshing sound of too much spit. Sickens me, all of it." The mentholated awe in his voice when he asks how it is we're both sick at the same time, and in the summer, how. So that's the whole piece. I really like this story because we can sort of trace the way that consecution works in the harsh kind of nicking sounds of sucking on a cough drop, all those harsh sounds at the beginning of the story, as well as the S sounds, which reflect sort of this sloshing sound of too much spit and how it sickens the narrator. I also love how at the beginning we get those kind of clicking sounds, as we can imagine the cough drop is kind of a brand new cough drop that's sharp around the edges when you're first sort of sucking on a cough drop. And over the course of these very short two sentences, four lines, three sentences, four lines, the cough drop gradually softens and we get softer vowel sounds. We get mentholated awe in his voice when he asks how it is we're both sick at the same time and in the summer how. So the harsh sounds of the beginning sort of melt away into these awe long vowels towards the end. It's a very short piece, but there are, you know, there's tension, there's stakes, there's the narrator's judgment, and her own sort of disgust. So I find this a really great piece to use when talking about consecution, and we can see how the alliteration and the sound play, that Scott took the sounds at the beginning and brought them forward into the next clause, the next part of the sentence, towards the end of the piece. So that's Christine Scott, and that's sort of some thoughts on consecution. I think that it might be challenging to pull off consecution in a longer work. And for authors that do use it in a longer work, I think possibly those works might be challenging for a reader. But I really like the idea of paying more attention to sentences and imbuing them with a greater intentionality of musicality and sound. I also like the idea of possibly using consecution in flash fiction or in moments of heightened emotion. I think using some of these ideas as almost flourishes or a way to reflect the heightened emotion at certain parts in a story might be effective. So as a poet, I think these ideas really interest me, and I can for sure pay more attention to language when I write. On the other hand, I want to talk about process in a different respect, as I had a little bit of a scare this past weekend. I was working on a new story, and I had finished a draft of about 4,500 words. Since I've been mostly working on my novel and revisions for the past year, this was my first new story I had drafted in nearly 1 year. So I was excited to see where the piece was going. I knew that it wasn't totally there yet, but I had a good beginning, and I really like getting words on the page because then you can revise them and work with them and strengthen them going forward. However, as I thought I had finished this piece, somehow my Microsoft Word glitched. I don't know what happened, but the draft completely disappeared. Obviously, I had saved it, but the file was nowhere to be found. It was not in my trash folder. All my other discarded files were there, but this piece was not, and I couldn't find it anywhere on my computer or in the cloud. I even went as far as downloading software to try to access the piece, like the software that can recover, like the save files from Microsoft Word when it crashes, those kind of things. But even the software couldn't find the file. So I was pretty upset by this. It felt discouraging. As I mentioned, it was the first new story I've written in a year. It's something I was thinking about for a number of weeks, and I was hoping to possibly workshop it soon. Rather than sort of keep looking on my computer because that wasn't really going anywhere, or moving on and working on a different project, I accepted the fact that I would have to rewrite the story. I began to think of writers for whom rewriting from the beginning is a part of their process. One of my classmates from my MFA at Brooklyn College told me that perhaps this draft that had disappeared on my computer was my draft zero. And she was referencing a professor in our MFA who believed that the first draft wasn't really a draft. It was simply the author telling themselves the story. The professor even advised writing the story from the beginning without looking at your draft zero. So basically the process is this. You write a story from beginning to end, or however you write it. Once you think it's finished, you then set it aside. Maybe you delete it, I'm not quite sure, but you don't look at it, and you write a new draft from the beginning without referencing the first story at all. This is now your first draft. So you pretend like the first thing you wrote was actually draft zero. Apparently, writers like Maddie Tien and Lauren Groff also follow this writing process, or one similar to it. So I found an article about Lauren Groff talking about her process. I'll read a little bit of it now. When Groff starts something new, she writes it out longhand in large spiral notebooks. After she completes a first draft, she puts it in a banker's box and never reads it again. Then she'll start the book over, still in longhand, working from memory. The idea is that this way, only the best, most vital bits survive. After mentioning this to me, another friend joked that I'd been, quote, groffed, or that essentially I'd been forced to try out Groff's writing process without agreeing to it in the first place. But I think there's a few key differences. The fact that Groff writes her drafts longhand and then puts them in a box, versus me typing on the computer and it simply disappearing into the cloud. Most significantly, I think rewriting a novel from scratch is a lot different than rewriting a short story. So I was grateful I'd only lost 4,500 words of a very rough first draft instead of having to rewrite an entire novel. When I was struggling with my novel, a number of friends actually recommended rewriting the entire manuscript without looking at the first draft. This sounded completely terrifying to me, but a number of writers swear by this. So Lauren Groff, obviously, as well as Madeline Tien and other writers, some of my friends. One friend was struggling with his novel, and this was his approach. He decided to rewrite it without looking at what the first draft or what he had the first time. And the idea is sort of having faith in yourself and in the story, and that whether you consult the first draft, you'll carry forward the important parts. Based on Lauren Groff and others, I took the day and I decided to rewrite as much of my story as I could. I was supposed to go to a literary event, but I ended up staying home to work. At the end of the day, I ended up writing 4,000 words towards a new story. And here's the thing, the story is very different. The story also feels a lot stronger. It's maybe a bit stranger. It's going a bit of a different direction than the first draft did. But I feel like it's a generative direction and that I feel excited to keep working on it. I think in this process, the important parts are all there. Like everything that I wanted to retain sort of carried forward from the first draft, which was lost. But it felt like all the weaker parts sort of sifted away through this process. I'm not there yet, but I feel like I have a solid beginning and I'm excited to keep working on this story. So I'm not sure I would try this process again, the Groff method, or if I did, I think I would include a safety net of keeping the first draft somewhere, maybe if it's a psychological thing to physically delete the first draft, maybe I would print it off first or email it to myself, but in the end, I did find this process to be generative. So these are two different approaches to writing, two different processes, very different. One involving looking behind you and carrying forward a sound or an image from the previous sentence or paragraph, and the belief that as long as you look behind you, you'll never get lost. And the other sort of suggests that you should sever all ties to your first draft, delete that draft zero without looking back, and that what you put on the page will be stronger as a result. So I'm not sure whether I'm a proponent of looking back or looking ahead. I think it depends on each individual project. But if either of these writing processes appeal to you, I encourage you to try them out. So maybe the prompt for today is to take either approach. Either challenge yourself to write a piece of flash fiction, paying particular attention to musicality and sound, and sustaining this for as long as possible, looking at the previous sentence or clause, and carrying forward an image or a sound. And the second prompt is to take a story that you've been working on and for whatever reason just isn't going anywhere. And without looking at that draft, maybe it's something you wrote a few weeks ago, a few months ago, a few years ago, try rewriting a new draft of your story without looking at that earlier draft and see where it takes you. Okay, good luck.